Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. As one of the first prominent scientists to start sounding the warning about climate change, James Hansen, NASA's chief climate scientist, has been both a figurehead and a figure of hate for the so-called climate skeptics. But he is undaunted. And Tom Watts caught up with him before his speech this week in Auckland.
Now, let's start kind of quite broadly. You are the kind of the man behind the 350 number. What's the significance of that number?
Well, 350 is really established by looking at the Earth's energy balance. We're now able to measure very precisely how much energy the Earth is gaining and losing. And what we find is that the Earth is now out of balance by about 0.6 watt. That means that there's more energy coming in from the sun than there is energy being radiated by the planet to space. And the reason is the increased carbon dioxide, which traps the heat radiation. So if we want to stabilize climate, we have to reduce the CO2 to a level such that the planet is back in balance. Well, it turns out that's about 350 ppm. We're now at 390 ppm. But if we want to restore balance and therefore stabilize the climate, we've got to go back to about 350.
Right, so we actually have to stop growing.
Yeah, we have to reduce our emissions. Now, the ocean and the biosphere take up some of the carbon dioxide. So if we would reduce our emissions by about 5% a year over the next several decades, then if we also do a good job, a better job in our forestry and our agriculture so that the soil keeps carbon dioxide better, keeps carbon better, and we reforest some of the regions that we deforested, then we can get back to 350 this century.
Absolutely. I mean, so you are here talking about coal and lignite mining. I mean, I'm quite familiar with coal. It's the thing that goes into stockings when you're bad and those kind of things. It's a thing we're all quite familiar with. But, I mean, what's lignite?
Well, it's one of the less energy effective types of coal. It's like the soft coal. Some of the coals has got other stuff mixed in with it. It's really less desirable as a fuel, but we're getting to the point where, you know, kind of running out of some of the higher grade coals, so we're even looking at some of these lower grade things, which, as I say, don't make sense, because what's going to happen is if we do burn those, future generations are going to have to figure out how to get that CO2 out of the atmosphere, and that's going to be very expensive.
Now, while you're here, you're covering a good proportion of the country from, you know, from Auckland to Wellington, but also the bright lights of Palmerston North and Gore. I mean, why so many places?
Well, we've got to get the public to understand what the situation is, because otherwise what's happening is fossil fuel industry and the people who are benefiting from business as usual, who are profiting from it, have more impact on the government than the wider public, and especially young people, who I think are getting the short end of the stick, because it's the current generation that gets the benefits of burning these dirty fuels, but the impacts of that will be felt mainly by young people and future generations and the other species on the planet.
Now, when you're traveling around these places, I imagine you travel and talk quite a lot. I mean, do you ever find yourself, I don't know, in terms of the audience, preaching to the converted to a certain extent?
Yeah, that's a part of the problem. The people who tend to come to this type of discussion are those who already know about it and who may be concerned about it. What we have to do is get the wider public to understand the situation. Because, you know, the prescriptions for how you solve it are actually not that painful for most people. What we have to do is put a price on carbon emissions. We should be collecting a fee from the fossil fuel companies at the mine or the port of entry, and we should be distributing that money to the public so that they then have the wherewithal to make the changes in their lifestyle to use less of the fossil fuels and use either cleaner energies or more energy-efficient vehicles and other things that use energy. What's happening is who has the bigger impact on governments? Well, it's the people who lobby and provide money to the legislators, and unfortunately it's all around the world.
How is New Zealand placed on the global stage? Because one of the arguments that I've heard amongst people that I know is that, you know, we shouldn't do anything because we're so small, we're just a fraction of the carbon emissions in the world. I mean, how much weight does that argument actually hold?
Well, that would be true for any place of the same number of people. Sure, we're all just part of the problem. But the fact is, I mean, New Zealand is a great green country in the sense that it's a beautiful green country. But
according to John Key, yes.
Well, but the emissions, in fact, from New Zealand are increasing. While to solve the problem, we've actually got to get on a path with rapidly decreasing emissions. So it's similar to most other countries. And what's clear is we can't develop these dirtiest of fuels like the lignite and the tar sands in North America. Those things, people have to understand, we've got to phase those out. But the way to make it happen is not to simply tell people these are bad, but to have a system that will move us to clean energies. And that means putting a simple price on carbon.
Can I ask you a difficult question?
Sure.
So two of the biggest recyclers in New Zealand are actually glass and steel manufacturers. So say, for example, for the steel industry, all the steel that we have in New Zealand, for the most part, comes from recycled cars. So on one level, it's particularly green. And then on the other side of that, to recycle that steel, I heard somebody say that it's as much power on a daily basis as Hamilton uses. On one level, we kind of have to keep these things here because if we got the steel from overseas, there's more kind of carbon emissions involved. But, I mean, should we be hugging these manufacturers or should we be picketing outside them? I mean,
the solution is very simple. All of these things will be affected by a gradually rising price on carbon emissions. That means you can call it a tax, but it's actually a fee that you collect from the fossil fuel companies at the first sale, at the mine or port of entry. And if that fee is rising over time, then the market will choose those ways that are most efficient for reducing the use of fossil fuels and moving us to the most efficient, clean energy future.
Mm-hmm. So in this kind of situation, that would be a kind of a global situation where the price of steel from China would go up to make basically encourage them to become more sustainable.
Sure. Anything that uses fossil fuels, the price will go up, but the money that is collected will go to the public so that they will have the ability. If they're smart, they will minimize their carbon footprint and they will make more in their dividend than they pay in increased cost. But in fact, this does need to be global, and that's the reason why you do need to do it, not with some cockamamie emission trading scheme or cap and trade system with offsets. Those are hatched by big banks and fossil fuel companies, and they've got all kinds of gimmicks in them. What we need is an honest, across-the-board carbon price. You can call it a tax if you like, but if the money goes to the public will accept that, and they will see that we're, in fact, moving toward a good, clean energy future, which is to everybody's benefit, except the fossil fuel industry, which refuses to move to a different kind of way of making money.
Do you think we need a good natural disaster? I say good natural disaster that can be tied directly back to climate change. Would that help?
Well, Mother Nature is helping us, and is going to help us more in the future. Unfortunately, in doing just that, we've already got enough examples. Though we can see the polar ice sheets beginning to melt. We can measure them very accurately now. We can see the climate zones shifting. We can see the increased intensity of both ends of the hydrologic cycle. As the atmosphere becomes warmer, it holds more water vapor, so we can get heavier rains and stronger floods. But at the same time, at the times and places where it's dry, because of the higher temperature, get more evaporation, you get more extreme droughts, and you get more intense fires. And we see that happening just as the models say that we expect it to happen.
And as a final kind of uplifting kind of note, looking forward, what are you hopeful for?
Well, I'm hopeful that young people will start to get involved in this and get their parents involved, and we'll begin to get some action. And perhaps the courts will begin to require the executive branches of the government to do their job and protect the rights of young people and future generations.
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
So if you're keen on hanging out with James Hansen while he's here, head along to 350.org.nz and all the information should be there.
That was Tom Watts talking to James Hansen, and after the break we talked to comedian Jason John Whitehead and heavy metal legend Beast Wars.